Starbound, and this year's Space News Highlights. You're listening to Are We There Yet?, the radio show exploring space exploration. Hi, I'm Brendan Byrne. A new book revisits America's space history, exploring the social and cultural context surrounding the country's most significant space milestones. We'll speak with authors Emily Carney and Bruce McCandless III about that new book, Starbound, A Beginner's Guide to the American Space Program, from Goddard's rockets to Goldilocks planets and everything in between. Then, 2024 was an exciting year for space exploration. To wrap up the year, we'll speak with Bruce and Emily about their favorite space highlights from the year, including things like a mission to Europa and the future of Artemis. That's ahead on Are We There Yet? The space race kicked off in 1957 with the Soviet launch of Sputnik. Not far behind was the United States and the Mercury program, selecting the nation's first astronauts to journey into orbit who had the right stuff.
It has become evident that full utilization of spaceflight requires man's ability to participate. Human intelligence and decision-making capacities are essential. Project Mercury. Its objective is to ensure safe orbital flight and recovery of a man in order to study man's capabilities in a space environment. These studies will form the basis for man's exploration of space.
Since that first leap, the U.S. has been advancing its exploration efforts decade after decade. But to learn about the history and future of the American space program, where should you start? One place is a new book called Starbound, A Beginner's Guide to the American Space Program, from Goddard's rockets to Goldilocks planets and everything in between. It takes readers to the beginning of how it all started and explains key events and facts that can help anyone understand the nation's space exploration efforts. Here to talk more about their book is co-authors Emily Carney and Bruce McCandless III. Emily and Bruce, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having us, Brendan. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Brendan. Glad to be here.
Thank you both. The book is Starbound, A Beginner's Guide to the American Space Program, from Goddard's rockets to Goldilocks planets and everything in between. Emily, this is quite a bit to cover. What was the motivation to write a book of this caliber?
Well, before we went through the whole publishing process, I just really wanted, a couple of years ago, I was like, man, I'd really like to write a book with somebody, but I wanted it to be sort of a collaborative effort because I needed somebody to hold me up to like the bargain, basically, because I was like, I'm never going to do this if I don't have somebody like breathing down my neck. I think I even made a post on Facebook like, hey, I'm interested in writing a book. I didn't expect anybody to respond. But Bruce was like, hey, I'm already working on something. Do you want to work on it with me? And I was like, heck yeah. And it was basically around the same time a couple of years ago, Colin Burgess, who is the series editor for the Outward Odyssey series with University of Nebraska, which is our press, he came out with an excellent book about the Soviet space program, basically the history of the program. We didn't want to copy him, but we had sort of an idea, like what if somebody wrote sort of a book that was analogous to it about the U.S. space program and what's going on now and what, you know, our history and stuff like that. So we got the idea for that and worked on the manuscript. And basically we checked with University of Nebraska Press, like, hey, would you guys be interested in this? And they were. And really the rest is history. So that's really it from my end. I really want to say Bruce and the press have been extraordinarily easy to work with. So I feel like I've been very blessed, this being my first actual book project. I've helped with a bunch of books and I've written a book chapter, but I've never actually had my name on the cover of one. I feel it's been extraordinarily easy to work with everybody. So,
and Bruce, you have quite a personal connection to the U.S. space program, do you not?
Well, I think so. My dad was employed by the space agency NASA for many years as an astronaut and flew on a couple of the shuttle missions. He was Bruce McCandless II, of course, and he's the guy you see in the jetpack in that famous photograph from STS 41B back in 1984.
A terrifying photo, I may add.
Yeah, terrifying and pretty memorable, as it seems like. Emily once told me that she had a poster of that image in her room growing up.
I did. I did have that, and I had Discovery. I think it was STS 41D. I had that poster as well. So Yeah, I was a nerd. I didn't have a lot of boyfriends and stuff. I always say that, but I didn't, because it was like, oh God, she's a dork, you know? But yeah, I did have those on my bedroom wall.
So that's cool. Yeah, so he's one of those photographs, and he was also on the mission that deployed the Hubble Space Telescope in 1990, and that may turn out to be the more lasting scientific contribution of those two flights, but he was proud of both of them, and that's sort of my connection. I grew up down there in Houston near the Johnson Space Center and watched some of those flights go up and was sort of immersed in that culture for a while.
Was your father a storyteller? Is that how you got into telling stories?
He was not a storyteller. He was a fact guy. He was a facts and measurements and sometimes stinted the narrative, just the opposite. And writing the book, I was sometimes amazed by what I thought I knew but didn't actually know. So I had to go back and check all my facts and figures, whereas he was definitely a facts and figures kind of guy.
The book, it encompasses literally the entire history of the U.S. space program, but there is a focus on not just the facts and figures, as you mentioned, Bruce, but the cultural and societal context. Emily, why was that important to frame the U.S. space program through cultural and society?
I'm going to answer it through the lens of probably the chapter that I had the most input on, the 1970s chapter. That time was not a particularly fun time for the United States. And culturally, that decade has been maligned a lot. There was a lot of very crappy entertainment during the 1970s. The funny thing is, I didn't live through that decade, but Bruce has, and he's told me a little bit about it. You know, there were, like, even the movies were terrible, you know? So that was kind of a critically maligned decade on many levels, but, you know, also politically, you had things like, you know, Watergate. You had a lot of factors like inflation and kind of a very difficult decade for the United States. And during spaceflight, especially human spaceflight that decade, you had the end of Apollo, and then you had Skylab, which was really not viewed very favorably at the time, just because I think a lot of people saw it as, oh, we're just going to Earth orbit. We're not going to the moon. People did not pay attention to that. And then you had Apollo Soyuz, which was kind of a nice little, you know, coda to the Apollo program. And then that was it. There was nothing until the space shuttle. And that decade was really viewed as like a stagnant time in spaceflight. And I think there were a lot of cultural references to the difficulty of that decade. It wasn't a very fun decade at the time. Yeah, so I think the cultural notes really sort of illuminate, okay, what kind of time was this? You know, you put it in contrast to the 50s and 60s where, you know, cars looked like rockets. Things were very sort of future looking. There were songs about space. You know, people were just nuts about spaceflight during that time. Whereas by the 70s, the glamour had worn off, so to speak. So we felt it was very important to put those cultural references in just to illuminate people's attitude to spaceflight during that time and sort of the general attitude people had to spaceflight during those times. I can say on my half, years ago, I found this great memo from Phil Chapman, former U.S. astronaut. He was actually Australian born, but he was talking about just after Apollo 11 landed, and people were losing interest in spaceflight. And he really predicted sort of the malaise, the late President Carter used in a speech. He was really predicting what would happen during the decade. So we really tried to capture that. I think we both felt, I can't speak for Bruce 100% because I'm not him, but I think I can say that we both felt it was important to sort of give a framework to what the decades were like. And we didn't want it to just be a rote sort of reciting of, you know, facts. Okay, this happened. Yay, we're done, you know?
You're listening to Are We There Yet? I'm Brendan Byrne. We're speaking with Emily Carney and Bruce McCandless III. They are the authors of Starbound, A Beginner's Guide to the American Space Program, from Goddard's Rockets to Goldilocks Planets and Everything in Between. Bruce, jumping off from what Emily said there about those consequential moments, those societal moments and pop culture moments in history that made big parts of the space program, is there a particular point in time that you think was the most consequential moment for the U.S. space program?
Well, I'm going to give you the obvious answer, and that is, yes, the most consequential moment was Apollo 11, specifically the instant Neil Armstrong set foot on the moon. And that was an encapsulation and sort of the zenith of our efforts in space up to that point. And they've served as a reminder and as a sort of goad in a way for our efforts now, because what we did was so remarkable that people have had a hard time becoming quite as enthusiastic ever since. So I think that moment, both the point of pride and in some ways it haunts us. It was like a piece of the 21st century was grafted into the 20th century. And it was so amazing that we've had a hard time equaling it ever since. I'll echo Emily on the cultural point. I think there's 100 different ways to write about the space program. And we chose to approach it through sort of a cultural lens. Norman Mailer, when he was writing about the Apollo program back in the 60s, approach it through sort of a personal psychosexual lens. Margaret Whitecamp at the Smithsonian wrote about the space program in terms of artifacts, and including maybe even especially space toys. A guy named Walter McDougall wrote about the space program and its history through a socio-political lens. Friend Lauren Grush, a journalist, wrote about the six first female astronauts, and sort of focused her study of the space program by a feminist lens. So there's lots of ways to do it. Emily and I aren't scientists. Scientists would have written a much different book. We tend to look at ourselves as more cultural historians. So that's, you know, where we came from in this.
With that said, Emily, as Bruce mentioned, there's 100 different ways to write the book. You framed it through the social and cultural perspectives. Who's the audience for this book? Who is going to get the most out of the content of Starbound?
I hope everybody is the audience for Starbound. I really hope it's everybody. We tried to write it in a way that was accessible to all people, whether they are very new coming into spaceflight enthusiasm or diehards. Being, you know, the creator of Space Hipsters, you know, I often see in the group, there are people who come to the group with no knowledge about spaceflight. They're just becoming enthusiastic. Maybe they just saw a launch or something like that, and that's what got them interested. And they don't know a lot, and they're intimidated. You know, they come into the group and there's a lot of people who have a massive amount of expertise in the group. They're very intimidated by it, and they might not ask questions. And, you know, that bothers me. I don't want that climate in the group. I want people to be comfortable asking questions. Well, why did this happen? Why did President Kennedy do this? Why did this event happen the way it did? And we kind of hope the book fills that void for people as well, and just keeps them interested. You know, you don't have to be, I think Bruce just said this, you know, we're not coming at people as scientists or as like 100%. We are the sole expert on this. You know, we're coming to people as really enthusiasts ourselves. So we really hope we've made it accessible to everybody.
I mean, I think Emily's right. In fact, she just said something that kind of got me excited. And that is, there's so many different perspectives on the space program. You can read Ed Gibson's book about solar science. You can read 500 pages that James Hansen wrote about Neil Armstrong. You can read about the first women astronauts. But, you know, the problem is that not that there's not information out there. There's maybe too much information out there. And so what we've tried to do is create a little narrative roadmap to the history of the space program that is simple enough for someone who's reasonably well-read and an intelligent person who's curious about things, who can sort of jump into this subject without feeling intimidated, certainly by the authors or the subject matter, hopefully. And so we hope we are really striking the fancy of a bunch of people out there.
That was Emily Carney and Bruce McCandless III. Emily is a space writer and the original space hipster, an online group of space enthusiasts. Bruce McCandless III is a writer. Emily and Bruce are the authors of Starbound, a beginner's guide to the American space program, from Goddard's rockets to Goldilocks planets and everything in between. Still to come, 2024's space highlights.
I do have to say I agree with Bruce 100% on Europa Clipper. That whole mission, like you said, has had kind of a lot of drama. So the story of the leading up to it is really awesome. I'm really excited about, you know, I know it's going to take a few years to get there, but I'm very excited to see what the results will be when it finally does reach there.
And our conversation with Bruce and Emily continues. That's ahead on Are We There Yet? You're listening to Are We There Yet? I'm Brendan Byrne. From SpaceX's massive rocket Starship to missions to explore an icy moon for what could be signs of life.
3, 2, 1, ignition. And liftoff. Liftoff of Falcon Heavy with Europa Clipper, unveiling the mysteries of an enormous ocean lurking beneath the icy crust of Jupiter's moon, Europa.
Engine chamber pressures are nominal.
2024 has been a year full of futuristic missions and explorations that are literally out of this world. But out of all the science missions of this year, a few stood out to Emily Carney and Bruce McCandless III. Our conversation continues now with authors Bruce McCandless and Emily Carney. Emily, Bruce, thanks for sticking around to talk about this year in space. This was quite an impressive year when it comes to space news. Bruce, I'm going to start with you. What do you think was the most interesting or one of your favorite launches or missions this year?
I'm a sucker for aliens, Brendan. So,
Me too, Bruce.
I kind of like the whole Europa Clipper idea. And you know, with Europa Clipper, we sent a probe out to Jupiter. My sense is that we're not looking so much for life itself as we're looking for conditions that could support life, or at least life as we understand it. Europa is a moon of Jupiter, and it's we think it's covered in ice, but we think also that there's a significant amount of water below the ice, and that there could be conditions that would be conducive to development or evolution of life there. And like anything with space, it takes a long time, and spaceship's not going to be there until 2030 or something like that. But I'm always excited when those missions take off, and I'll be excited to hear the results of what they find out there.
That was a great story because there was conflict, there was delays, there was uncertainty if it would even get off the ground in its launch window, and it successfully did get off of our planet and head towards Europa. So I would have to agree with you. I love aliens as well. And that was a great mission too. Emily, same question. What's a standout mission or launch for you in 2024?
I do have to say, I agree with Bruce 100% on Europa Clipper. That whole mission, like you said, has had kind of a lot of drama. So the story of the leading up to it is really awesome. I'm really excited about, you know, I know it's going to take a few years to get there, but I'm very excited to see what the results will be when it finally does reach there. And I think it's cool because I know the mission is to figure out if Europa can support life, but I think it's also going to tell us hopefully about how life happened on Earth and how things evolved on Earth. I'm hoping we learn a little bit about that, because I think if you look at like interplanetary missions, even, you know, Juno or Voyagers, for example, two very different missions. I think there's a little kernel of them that sort of, they want to explore what happened here, you know, as well. Not just the, you know, how did Earth evolve? Because Earth is also a planet, you know? So I'm very excited about that. The whole Starliner saga has been very interesting, to say the least, just seeing how that whole thing has played out and kind of also how different media sources have covered it. There's been the whole, you know, they're stranded in space type thing, and got everybody. They're really not. They're fine. They're doing fine up there. They're not, you know, suffering or anything. They have resources up there. But that was a very interesting story as well. I don't know if it's a cautionary tale or not. I guess we will see probably more in the future. But I think that's been sort of a big headline grabber.
And it's an important mission, and it definitely highlights, you know, some of the challenges that come with human spaceflight. But Emily, as you mentioned, a lot of news outlets picked it up. And I mean, we can look at the glass as half full here and say there's a lot of interest in human space exploration with all of the coverage of this mission, right?
Yeah, I agree 100%. It's actually kind of encouraging in a way. I mean, I know it's not the kind of attention that Boeing wanted, or the kind of attention that NASA may have particularly wanted, but it does show that people do have a sort of vested interest in spaceflight. So, and you know, even though a lot of news outlets got it wrong, I think E! News claimed that the astronauts were light years away. They are not light years. They're not that far away, everybody. But even though some of the news sources got the details incorrect, I still think, you know, it does show that, well, at least people are watching out for this kind of news. And there is sort of an interest in this in our culture, in U.S. society, which is good.
Yeah, if they were light years away, they'd be closer to Bruce's aliens than us, right? Bruce, another private company had a banner year as well, SpaceX. What were some of the highlights you've seen, you know, watching this company do some pretty incredible things this year?
They are on a roll for sure. And it's wonderful in some ways. And alarming in others, and I'll get into that in a second. But the biggest thing they did, I think, is something that a lot of us saw, and that is catch their super heavy booster and their mechanical arms down there in Boca Chica back in, I think that was October. It not only is it spectacular and something that is just cool in and of itself, but it's a substantial step on the way toward Elon's hope to get to full reusability of that system. you know, SpaceX has pretty much got a chokehold on the commercial space launch market. I think they, what do they launch? Something like 130 rockets this year. Turns out it was announced this year. I think they signed a contract with the DOD back in, I think, 2021 to build some sort of a spy satellite network for $1.8 billion. And that was widely reported this year. And they were awarded a contract to deorbit the ISS this year from NASA. So they're everywhere all of a sudden. Like I say, it's great because Emily and I were talking about this a couple weeks ago, back in the 90s, in early 2000s. In fact, we might have forgotten this, but the American commercial space launch industry was moribund. It was kind of pathetic. And the French were, the ESA was eating our lunch, and you could go buy rocket time from the Russians and the Chinese, but we didn't have a whole lot to offer, and suddenly SpaceX has recaptured that whole market, they're clearly a force to be reckoned with, and they're keeping billions of dollars here in the U.S. for sure, which is great, but we need some competition for SpaceX now, believe it or not, so I was kind of encouraged to see that Blue Origin has finally received an FAA license to try and launch its New Glenn rocket, I'd like to see that succeed and get a little bit more agitation in the market, frankly.
And that could come as early as the first week of 2025. I think that's a good segue to ask you, Emily, what are some of the big news stories you're going to be keeping your eye on in 2025?
Oh, gosh. I'm really looking forward to seeing what will happen with the Artemis program. I know Artemis 2 has been sort of pushed out, I think, to 2026. There's been speculation about certain things with the program, about the status of SLS in the future. I can't answer to any of that, but it'll be interesting to see what happens with the program. I'm also looking to see, you know, Starship basically more or less, you know, if they're like, okay, it's good enough for us to start really thinking about using it. The last year or so, we've seen Starship go from, you know, blowing up to now it's, you know, it's orbiting Earth and they're starting to, you know, they're starting to catch the booster, which is really amazing. It really is something from science fiction and now it's becoming reality. So those are things that I'm really looking forward to in the coming year. Also, we have a new administration coming in January. You know, Jared Isaacman will be the NASA administrator. I'm interested to see what he does as well and how he performs as an administrator.
And Bruce, what are you looking forward to in 2025?
I don't know if I'm looking forward to it so much as I'm fascinated by the way things are going to shake out with the whole Trump-Musk-Isaacman triangle and what's going to happen with Artemis. There are lots of wild predictions about maybe Artemis being canceled. I don't see that happening. Partly because, you know, SpaceX is pretty well integrated into the Artemis program since they're supposed to be building the lunar lander, or one of them anyway. But I do think it's going to be interesting to see what happens to the so-called legacy contractor program down there in Florida and how these new space guys are going to maybe light a fire under them, or try to move the program to private, not to private because they're existing private companies, but to new companies. I guess that's the best way to put it. I just want to see how that all works out. I mean, I'm guardedly optimistic that it'll work out well to have some new thinking down there, but we've got to see.
Let's end the conversation with a little fun here. Emily, I know you're in Florida. Bruce, you grew up in Texas. Which is the real space state? Is it Texas or is it Florida here?
Yeah. Clearly it's Texas. I will say it used to be Florida, and I know that because I used to watch I Dream of Jeannie, and they were all down there at Kennedy Space Center, and they were wearing uniforms and launching rockets down there. But really the shift is pretty clear now. We've got Johnson Space Center here, of course, but we've also got SpaceX and its new launch facilities down in Boca Chica. We've got Blue Origin launching rockets out in Van Horn in West Texas, which is safe because you can't hit anything because there's nothing out there. And the state has recently funded this big space commission, and to invest in space industries. And we've got Firefly, and we've got lots of other space industry here all of a sudden. And so I think more and more the gravity of the space industry is going to be here in Texas.
I'll give you the last word, Emily.
Well, it's obviously it's Florida. honestly, I'm okay with splitting it. This is my real answer. I'm honestly okay with splitting it up between Florida and Texas. Texas has, obviously has the commercial space flight. It has, the Starship heads, has Johnson Space Center. Florida, I don't think we're ever going to lose. I hope we don't ever lose, the moniker of being America's spaceport. I think we're pretty well settled in our heritage and stuff like that. And also, 80 miles, roughly 40 miles away, you got Space Mountain. We got Space Mountain. If you want to get a taste of space flight in a rickety 50-year-old roller coaster, there you go.
Well, let me put it this way. Have you ever heard anyone say, Dofuniak Springs, we've had a problem?
I will try to play the part as unbiased moderator here, but this show does air in Florida. So, where I'm going to tip the scales. So we was being with Emily Carney and Bruce McCandless III. Their book is Starbound, A Beginner's Guide to the American Space Program, from Goddard's Rockets to Goldilocks Planets and everything in between. Emily, Bruce, thank you so much for joining us.
That's been a pleasure. Thank you, Brendan.
That was Bruce McCandless and Emily Carney, the authors of Starbound, A Beginner's Guide to the American Space Program, from Goddard's Rockets to Goldilocks Planets and everything in between. Starbound is available tomorrow, January 1st. That's going to do it for this week's show. If you're not already, be sure to subscribe to the show's podcast feed so you never miss an episode. Do that on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, really wherever you get your podcasts. Stay connected with the show. We're on social media. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook, AWTY Space. If you've got an idea for a future episode of the show or you want to join us as a guest, shoot us an email. We're arewethereyet@cfpublic.org. More space coverage is online at cfpublic.org/space. Are We There Yet is a production of Central Florida Public Media. Our producer is Marion Summerall. Editorial guidance from LaToya Dennis. Support for Are We There Yet comes from our listeners. Until next week, I'm Brendan Byrne. Thanks for listening.